welcome everybody to Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. This is episode number 87, and we're doing it live.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it, and we'll do it live.
This is the first time we've done a live podcast in... How many days was it? 360...
Pretty close to a year. Which pretty much is around the same time Ben joined us.
It's been a long time. Been a long time. We used to do this once a week. Then it just got crazy difficult with technology always crashing on us. But we thought, hey, let's try it again. So, here we are. Let's get started. Let's introduce our panel, shall we? Who do we have with us today? Mazer.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm connected and hooked everything up and
hooked into the Matrix.
Yeah. Very sloppily hooked into the Matrix. Might need to check that needle, see if it's clean. I don't know. I don't know. What do they call that? The plug thing they stick in the back of your head. Does that have a name?
It had a name. Yeah.
It's a plug.
Head stab thingy.
We got Ben P with us.
What's going on, Dr. Bregman? How are you, sir?
Oh, you know, life is interesting.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it is. I'm actually glad to be here today. This is my first Geek Tyrant live podcast. I've been podcasting with you guys for a while now, and this is my first realm into the, or kind of delving into the live realm, so I'm looking forward to it.
Sounds exciting. I hope you enjoy yourself. And we also have a guest with us today. Would you like to introduce yourself, sir?
Hey, I am Kyle, and I am normally co-host of the Geek Tragedy podcast and also a fan of Geek Tyrant. And, you know, every great hip-hop artist needs a featuring, so to celebrate the funkadelicness of the Geek Tyrant podcast, I am your featuring of the day.
Awesome. Awesome. Kyle, do you want to tell people where they can find you on that other podcast?
Yeah, definitely.
That's npccomics.com/geektragedy or look for us on iTunes.
Good stuff, good stuff.
Well, what movies came out this weekend, guys?
You saw Machete, is that right?
So did Kyle.
I did see Machete, and yes, we've talked about Kyle seeing Machete as well. Definitely.
Right. Yep, I literally just got home from it 20 minutes ago.
So you're all fresh and ready to, like, go nuts.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
awesome.
Yeah.
I saw Going the Distance last week, so maybe I'll talk just a little bit about that. I kind of gave a very mini review on last week's episode, but do you want to talk a little bit about the box office numbers? Do you like top five?
Yeah, let's do top five.
I've got them here in front of me, actually, if you want
go
me to...
Go for it, because
right,
I don't have them up in front of me.
Yeah, that's cool, I got it. Number one at the box office this weekend, The American, the George Clooney movie, actually made...
Really?
Yeah, surprised me too, yeah.
That movie looks so boring, I can't even
describe
it. It did
look boring, oh gosh, I don't know. I heard it was slow but good, but I don't know. I don't know if I can believe that.
If a trailer...
The American beats the Mexicans. USA, USA!
If a trailer makes me bored, it just makes me think of, wow, that multiplied by 20 or something.
Just, yeah.
Just watching the trailer, you kind of get the gist of what the whole movie's about.
Yeah, I mean, it did fairly well for itself. It had a $20 million budget, and it actually made $13.1 million in its opening weekend, so it's coming pretty close to making its money back already.
Wait, Clooney did a film for $20
million? Yeah.
So, I mean, he's got to have a lot of points, I'm guessing.
Something. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on. But number two at the box office this weekend, Machete, $11.4 million. So, like we said, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Number three, Takers, $10.8 million.
Jeez, that made that much money?
Yeah.
Bad poster and all?
You know
bad
what?
Poster indeed.
I'm actually happy that it made some money because, you know, Hayden Christensen needs the work.
He does.
It's not,
they all do. Everyone in that movie needs the work.
But, you know, I have a special place in my heart for anyone who had their career destroyed by George Lucas's bad directing, so...
Yeah.
Indeed. Let's all sound a trumpet of sorrow for Hayden Christensen. Number four at the box office this weekend, The Last Exorcism, $7.3 million. And rounding out the top five, we've got Going the Distance with $6.8 million.
Now, I actually saw The Last Exorcism.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I did. I didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, but yes, I did see The Last Exorcism, and I actually liked it. It's a pretty solid film, just a, you know, good filmmaking, good storytelling. Wasn't as scary as I thought it would be, mm-hmm. I guess, but I liked it. You know, it's one of those movies that I'm kind of I can't really recommend to everybody because I don't think everyone will like it.
Sure.
But you know, one of my buddies at work, I told him about it, and you know, he asked if he's like a big movie buff like I am, and he asked if I would recommend it to him, and I was like, you know, I don't know, man. Even though he's a big movie buff, I wasn't sure how he would, you know, take the movie, and so I was kind of apprehensive. But he went and saw it anyway, and he ended up really liking it. So, it's a good movie. It's a good solid movie. One you don't need to see up on the big screen. You could easily rent it and get the same effect that you'd get going to the theater, minus the annoying teenagers,
right,
on their cell phones.
Oh man, this could digress into some bad territory real quick.
Beach balls?
There were no beach balls. Okay. There were just annoying teenagers yelling at each other throughout the film.
So this has been a trend at the local Burbank 16 that there have been people who've been bringing beach balls, and it's really annoying because, you know, as geek tyrants, we show up an hour too early, we get to the theater, we get our seats, and before the movie, you've got these kids with their beach balls.
I mean, we sound like a bunch of cranky old men right now, but it's really, like, guys, if you're in the Los Angeles area and bringing beach balls to theaters, just please stop. Like, it's not necessary at all.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to, like, a midnight showing of The Room, then fine, but,
yeah, exactly.
You know.
Seriously. So yeah, I mean, if you get a chance to see it, go see it. If not, just wait for DVD. You'll be fine.
Cool. Let's.
I especially like the ending. I just want to say that. I like the ending. Okay, go. Let's move on.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, let's do this week in box office history. I mean, Kyle actually offered up. Okay, go ahead.
Before you get started on that, I have to say one thing that just amazed me about the box office numbers is Inception is still in the top 10.
Yes.
It's, at least according to Rotten Tomatoes, it's number 9, and that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, man, it's, if there is a movie this summer that came out that deserves it, I would say it's Inception and or Scott Pilgrim, but...
Yeah.
Scott Pilgrim, obviously. Yeah, we know that it's not going to be Scott Pilgrim, so...
I just love when you watch a movie and you go to the theater and Inception just got out, and you know it's Inception because people are talking about Limbo.
I even went and saw Scott Pilgrim again this week.
Nice. You doing know, your part. I mean, that's what you're doing, you know?
Doing my part, you know? Gotta save the movie.
Oh, I will say that I have never gotten as much nasty email in my entire life as when I gave Scott Pilgrim a bad review.
Ooh.
Uh-oh. Man,
that's a conversation for another time, I feel. We could battle about that for a long time. Let's go ahead and do This Week in Box Office History. Kyle actually offered up the suggestion of 1982. We haven't really done the kind of early 80s in a while, and Kyle suggested 82 as being like one of the kind of premier years in geek movie history. So what do you guys think? Let's go around the circle and everybody just guess. I mean, for those of you listening for the first time, This Week in Box Office History is just a little game we play where we kind of guess what the
movies. This is going to be interesting because the chat room can actually participate.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they can cheat, though. That's the problem. It's because we have no way of enforcing any sort of rules over people in the chat room, but we'll just have to trust your honor, chat room members. But
the honor of the chat room.
Indeed. Well, what do you guys think? Let's go around the circle. Just let us know what you think the one of the movies in the top 10 of box office for the same weekend in 1982. So
1982.
See, I only know two films from that year.
All right, Mazer. Well, let's start with you then.
I only know E.T. and I know Gandhi. That's.
Well, which one are you going with, sir? You got to make the decision.
I'm going to go with E.T.
E.T. is absolutely correct. E.T. is number two at the box office with 7.6 million. So
okay,
it sounds
I
like...
I'm going to pick a new one because that's what I was going to pick. Okay, but I'm going to try for another one.
All right, let's hear it, Dr. Bankman.
All right. Gandhi. No, I'm just joking. No, 82. Crap.
You're going to kick yourself when you remember some of the movies that were in that year.
Oh, we always do.
Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi is incorrect. That is not in the top 10. Kyle, how about you? What's your guess?
Damn.
You know, half the reason I suggested this year was just so that I could yell, Khan! Khan! That's right. Wrath of Khan. 1982.
That actually was not in the top 10 for this particular weekend, though.
Was it too early?
It must have been. I'm not sure. So, alright. Well, you know, relatively decent guesses from everyone.
It seems like the flip opposite of every week. I get nothing.
Oh, yeah. And everybody else gets something. Yeah. Alright, so let me run through really quickly the top 10 for 1982. Number one at the box office, An Officer and a Gentleman, which is one of the... I'm
should have known that one. It's one of my favorite movies.
Awesome. Number two, E.T. Oh, by the way, Officer and a Gentleman, 7.7 million. E.T., 7.6 million. Number three, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I don't know if you could really consider that a geek movie, but it's definitely a classic. 3.2 million, so actually a big drop from number two to number three as far as money goes. Number four, a movie called Zapped, which I've never heard of in my entire life, and it actually has an exclamation point at the end of the title.
Zapped.
That's three.
I remember the title. I remember the title, like the logo looks like.
Yeah. So that made $3 million. Number five is Friday the 13th, Part 3, 2.6 million.
I should have known that.
Number six, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, 2.4 million. Number seven, The Soldier, $2 million. Number eight, The World According to Garp, 1.8 million. Number nine, here we go, Rocky 3. 1.7 million. And number 10, this is kind of getting into Kyle's geek premonitions here. Number 10, The Beastmaster, 1.6 million. So there you have it for the weekend of September 3rd, 1982.
So 1982, also the year of Blade Runner.
Yes.
Although that was a little earlier in the year. And I think Never Ending Story, if I'm not wrong.
Man, that is a good year overall, definitely.
That was a good year, wasn't it? It's just a bad weekend.
Right, yeah, exactly.
A bad weekend in 1982.
So, why don't you guys go ahead and talk a little bit about Machete. Tell us what you guys thought about this movie.
I saw the file. Rogue federal agent. Of destiny. Machete. I know what they did to your family.
I did not get a chance to see it. Mazer, did you see it at all?
No.
Okay.
In fact, my wife almost said, I'm not going to let you watch that film. And then she said, well, if you want to, you can. But then she said, don't watch that film.
So what did you guys think about Machete?
It was a grindhouse film for sure, man. I mean, that movie pretty much was made in the 70s, and it took all the elements of those films. I mean, if you've seen, you know, Death Proof and what was the other one?
Planet Terror.
I mean, this just kind of takes that style and just blows it up into this Machete thing. It's a fun movie to watch. It was... and it takes a... You gotta be... a certain kind of person to enjoy a movie like this. You gotta kind of be a little twisted and demented in the head, I think, to like it. I enjoyed it. That being said, I enjoyed the movie. Yeah. But I know not everyone will enjoy it. I know not everyone will like it. And the movie starts out like really strong. Like it, you know, the first 10-15 minutes is just balls out insane. You're just your eyes are just wide open. You're just like, I can't believe this is happening right now. And then, you know, the movie starts, but it never lived up to that beginning moment of the film. You know, it never got that crazy again. I mean, it had its moments where it got like crazy violent blood. I mean, all that stuff happens throughout the whole film, but the rest of it just didn't compare to how it started. It really like started out with a bang and then just kind of moseyed along the rest of the time with some high moments and low moments, stuff like that. So,
all right. Well, what did you think, Kyle?
Well, you know, I got dragged to this movie by my podcasting co-host, Dave, and it's one of those things where it really shows the difference between his tastes and mine, because he's the type that's really into, like, Inglourious Bastards and all that. But mm-hmm. to me, there's just, you know, I'm the type that, like, if I'm going to go watch a shitty 70s action movie, I'll go watch an original one. And, you know, because I like, you know, bad, you know, so bad it's good movies like, you know, The Room and Birdemic and all that. But to me, there's just, like, there's something about trying to force that just,
yeah,
to me, comes out really cardboard.
Okay. All right.
And, you know, there's a difference between, like, you know, being influenced by, you know, shit 70s action movies and then, like, actually making one. And to me, that's, like, the whole Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez thing, in a lot of ways, it's that. Because it's like, you know, like when Jackie Brown came out, I was like, you know, if I want to go watch Across 110th Street, I'll go watch Across 110th Street. Sure. I don't want to necessarily see a redo of it. And, you know, Machete just kind of struck me the same way. It's like, you know, yeah, but, you know, why not just go rent some old, you know, 70s action movie?
Yeah, you could have just as much fun renting a true grindhouse film than going out and paying money to see a recreation, I guess, of a grindhouse film.
Can you find grindhouse films on, like, Netflix and stuff? Is that even possible?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Just wondering.
I don't know. It sounds to me like there's a kind of a little bit of a divide there between just the mentality that you guys had going into it. I mean, like, for me,
I knew what I was getting myself into when I saw it. I knew it was going to be, you know, I knew it was going to be a crappy film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I feel like movies know? Like this, I mean, again, I haven't seen the film, but for me, I think movies like this almost are kind of cop-outs in the way that they can excuse every flaw they have in this guise of being wrapped up in this kind of 70s exploitation style. Like, they can kind of hide behind the style to explain away any flaws that the movie has. But I don't know, for a movie that's so blatantly trying to be something, I think that's okay in this regard. For some reason, I don't know, that strikes me. I mean, Kyle, it sounds like that kind of rubs you the wrong way a little bit. For me, it's like, it's so blatantly just an exercise in recreating this genre that I don't necessarily have an issue with it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't know why this genre needs to be recreated.
Yeah, that's probably,
you know,
true.
It's not like it's, you know, the lost films of Charlie Chaplin or something where, like, you know, lost Doctor Who episodes where we're putting them together from scratch. I mean, it's not like there's a lack of cheesy 70s action movies around.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're still getting cheesy action movies. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, there's really no point in recreating it. I guess it's just a matter of, you know, Robert Rodriguez and his crew saying, hey, you know, let's get together, let's get some cash together, and let's just go out and have fun filming this movie, because we're not going to spend a lot of money on it anyway. It'll probably make its money back. If it doesn't, who cares? Let's just go have fun making it.
Well, the question I want to post...
I think it was more fun for... I think, you know, they just had a fun time doing it. At the same time, I hope Rodriguez doesn't... This isn't his new thing where all he's going to do now is make Grindhouse films the rest of his career. Grindhouse films and Spy Kid films.
Yeah, I feel like he's probably getting it out of his system at this point. But the question I want to pose to you guys is, do you think that Rodriguez would have made Machete if the trailer in the movie Grindhouse hadn't have gone over as well as it did, or if that trailer wasn't in the movie at all? Because I know he wrote the script for this in the early 90s, and it hasn't been made since then. Do you think it hasn't been made for a reason?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, had it not been in the trailer park for the Grindhouse double feature, no, the movie would have never been made. But once people saw that, seriously, the internet and the audience, they asked for it. I mean, when they saw that trailer, it was like, we want to see Machete in a full-length live-action movie. You know, that's what it was like. I mean, that's what happened. And they, you know, found a market there and went with it and cast a whole bunch of, you know, decent actors mixed with really bad actors.
Yeah. I think you're right. That's interesting that you say, like, the internet practically asked for it, because I think this is, like, one of the most literal, examples of that, where something happens and the kind of internet as a whole, like, for the most part, is on board with something. I feel like that's very rare when... I mean, of course you're going to have voices of dissent, you know, as you would for everything, but I feel like the majority of people who saw that Machete trailer were like, yeah, I'd be down for seeing a full... Like, it looks ridiculous, let's do it, it looks fun. I think, you know, you can only say that about, like, Machete and maybe, I don't know, Snakes on a Plane or something, like, something with that kind of internet culture kind of built into the creation of it, but that's an interesting point, Dr. Beckman.
I think if there's anything that this summer proved, and especially Scott Pilgrim proved, it's that, you know, listening to the fans on the internet isn't necessarily a recipe for box office success.
True, and I mean, right? Snakes on a Plane could say the same thing. Yeah.
I love that there was a song for that. Okay.
By the way, just as an aside, this happened in my theater, like, the last two times I went to see a movie, including for Machete, is that during the, what's the new movie, Demon, I think it is?
Oh, Devil, yeah.
Devil, that as soon as, you know, people were into the trailer, and then the second that Shyamalan's name appeared on the screen, everyone booed.
Yeah.
Dude, that happens to me every time I go to the movies.
It really does. It's every single time.
It's crazy, because you see people in there that haven't seen this trailer yet. And, you know, even in this last time when I went to the movies, I sit next to some guy, and he was like, you know, he's talking to the guy next to him. He's like, oh, this looks like a good movie. You know, and then Shyamalan's name comes, like, oh, that's going to be a piece of shit. You know, it's like, you know, Shyamalan's name changed his mind on that movie, and that guy is not going to, you know, just like, well, that sucks, because Shyamalan is involved with it, you know? His name is not...
His name is poison at this point.
I'm going to go see this movie. I'm going to go see Devil when it comes out. You know,
I am too, because I think it looks like it'll be a fun movie. And I know that, you know, Shyamalan didn't direct it. He didn't write it. He came up with the story, but he had nothing to do really with the production of this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie was done by other people. So that's why I think there's a chance it'll be good. Just because Shyamalan's name is attached to it doesn't mean it's going to suck. But, you know, Shyamalan's name is attached to it.
Yeah, that's true.
I would have thought that by now they'd start running a trailer where they didn't have his name on it. so people would quit booing the movie.
I boo the TV commercial.
I think they're pot committed at this point. It's like so close to the actual release date now. I think it comes out, what, like September 17th or something like that. Some middle of this month, and it's like they've already gone with it. They're not spending any more money on the marketing for this movie than what they've already spent. So they're just going to try to hope that they'll get whatever few Shyamalan fans are out there and maybe be able to convert some people who hopefully just blink during that title card or something.
In every instance that you guys have watched it, is it usually the first weekend that these boos are happening?
I would say
for me, yes, because I caught up with Salt maybe a month late, and this is not, you know, the Geek Tyrant audience. This is people who come into a movie a month late, and that's what I happened to. That came on, and I was like the only person who booed. And I was like, I don't care. I'm still booed. But no one else was on board with that. And I think the people who do watch films in the first week are usually the people who will watch every movie out there and are like, yeah, Shyamalan has burned us on a bunch of films. So
yeah,
I'm going to look at his name and think, crap quality film.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm one of the very few people to have not given Last Airbender an entirely horrible review, and even I have to say that, yeah, it's over, M. Night. Time to retire. Buy a ranch.
It'll be interesting to see if he gets any more work, because his name, I mean, I know he was shopping that one script around, but I doubt anything will happen with that after the failure of The Last Airbender, and then all the boos that he's getting with... you know, just his name. Whenever his name pops up on the screen in movie theater, people are like, oh, Shyamalan.
I would almost say, like, the best move he could do is work on a really good miniseries.
That might work.
Get back to a small budget. And
or just
something
get into
all
TV,
about
maybe. Like, just TV in general. Like, do, like, a Frank Darabont. You start working on something like Walking Dead, you know, something like that. That's not necessarily... Well, I guess, does Walking Dead classify as a miniseries? Or is that technically a show now?
I guess they're saying it's a show now.
Okay.
Because originally it was going to be a 6-part miniseries,
right.
But
I know they
AMC,
they already got picked up for another season.
They love it,
they
so yeah,
started,
they're picking
so.
It up, so.
Cool. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good career move for him. I think he can get into something like that and actually make like a pretty decent product on TV where he's got
and
a little bit
up
more
his skills,
time.
Like.
Yeah, totally.
Or send him to, you know, be in charge of a couple seasons of Warehouse 13 or something like that. You know.
I might have something to contribute to that conversation if I've ever seen Warehouse 13, which I haven't, so I can't really... I don't know if that's a joke or if I just... I'm completely... That one went over my head. I'm sorry. So, I don't know. Like, overall kind of concluding thoughts about Machete, guys? Any final words on that?
Sounds like you have to sell yourself on it. To watch it.
Yeah, you really do. I can't sell anybody on it. I'm reluctant on at telling people that they should go see it or recommending it because there's a good chance that they're not going to like it. Because it is just this silly, silly, violently bloody, ridiculous exploitation movie of death.
All right, Kyle, how about you?
Look, here's the thing. I will say, much like Snakes on a Plane, you know if you're the kind of person who's going to enjoy Machete. You know, if you're the kind of person who likes the idea of it, it will deliver exactly what you're expecting.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't go unless you're convinced you're the sort of person who would like it.
You know, interesting that I think that actually is a really great transition into. I'll talk just very briefly about Going the Distance.
Dad!
Look, man, I just thought maybe, you know, it'd be fun if I DJ'd your hookup.
What was our rule?
Just because I can hear you through the wall doesn't mean I get to participate.
Right.
I'm leaving in 6 weeks.
We're saying.
Keep it light.
Disease free and light.
It's weeks too fast. Me like you.
Aaron,
I'll be here and you'll be there and we'll be long distance because I'm crazy about you.
I'm crazy about you too.
Want a hug?
Okay.
Come on, buddy. There you go.
Why are your eyes closed?
Are yours not closed?
No.
But that advice, I think, I could give to the same kind of crowd who would be interested in going see Going the Distance. It's like, if you think you're going to like it, then you'll probably like it, because that's exactly right. It's just going to deliver exactly every single thing that you expect it to, based on the trailers and stuff like that, and nothing more and nothing less. And it's just, like, completely, I feel, middle of the road, like, I don't know. Listen, and we're talking very kind of disparagingly about romantic comedies here on this podcast, because they're frankly not geared towards us, and we kind of look down on them to with some degree. I am a fan of good romantic comedies. I have no problem saying that. Movies like Definitely Maybe and Love Actually and like When Harry Met Sally. I'm trying to think of some other decent romantic comedies that are escaping me right now. But I have no problem saying that I enjoy these films when they're good. My thing with romantic comedies is if they provide something different, like a slightly different spin on exactly what you're expecting, then I have respect for the movie, at least, if not just outright like it, you know? Going the Distance does not do anything new, but I don't know. It's not terrible. It's not a Katherine Heigl movie. It's not something that's reprehensible in any way. It's funny in some parts. It's kind of drawn out in others, and it ends exactly the way you think it's going to end. I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's a romantic comedy, so whatever. Like, draw your own conclusions, but I don't know. I mean, there's not much to really say about this movie, with the exception of, like, solid, solid supporting performances from Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He was pretty great. Jason Sudeikis from Saturday Night Live was pretty good as well. And then Jim Gaffigan and Christina Applegate were also very funny in it. So it's like, you know,
it also all seems like really safe casting.
It is, and, you know, obviously Justin Long and Drew Barrymore are actually dating in real life, so even that, in some degree, is safe casting. But I will say, I will give them some credit and say that that chemistry actually did come across on screen, but I don't know. I don't know if that warrants making an entire movie based on it. But, I don't know, I mean, I'm saying this with movies in our recent past, like Fever Pitch and these other just high-concept romantic comedies that I can't possibly get behind. You know, things like You Again, which I love Kristen Bell, and that movie's coming out soon, but it's like, it's so absurd, the very premise of it. That movie, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, takes place with, like, Kristen Bell is now out of high school, but her high school nemesis is going to marry her brother or something, and then, like, her mom's high school nemesis is the mom of that girl, and it's just, like, all these ridiculous connections and stuff that these romantic comedies, like, are running out of their formulaic crap, and they have to try to put spins on it, but it ends up being the same movie that you've seen over and over and over again. Going the Distance, go ahead.
That's exactly the idea. I mean, you know, romantic comedies, you know, chick flicks are comfort food. You know, you go see a chick flick for the same reason you go to Denny's, because you know exactly what you're going to get every single time you go to one, and it's comforting.
That's true. I just feel like, even women have to have higher standards in their movie watching. I don't think that's too much to ask. I think they should, like, I don't know, I'm obviously speaking way out of turn and making broad generalizations about women in general, based on things that I know nothing about. But I feel like...
Then again, who didn't know what they were going to get going to The Expendables? You know, you could say the same thing about action movies.
Yeah, and absolutely. Yeah, that's the point that I always bring up when I talk about romantic comedies. It's like action movies, especially like B-action movies, are the exact same thing as romantic comedies. It's just like, I don't know. I think women can and should aspire to a little bit better quality when it comes to those kinds of movies. I don't think it's too much to ask for something like Definitely Maybe, which falls into some of these formulas a little bit, but it's actually just a legitimately good movie. Like, there's nothing wrong with having good romantic comedies out there. I just wish that they wouldn't pay to see movies that they know are going to be terrible, but they think are going to be quote-unquote cute.
Well,
and it's like,
women watch TV that they know is going to be terrible. Let's look at all the Desperate House of... What name? Name a city.
Yeah.
Touched by an Angel.
Real Housewives
of
whatever.
That's all I've got to say about that.
So, yeah,
I don't know. Maybe this is getting into, like, the conversation that is, like, way overreaching. You know, this is getting into like the nature of romantic comedies and stuff, but I don't know. I guess overall I'll kind of bring it back and wrap it up a little bit, that Going the Distance was good, and it was completely inoffensive for a romantic comedy, so I don't know. It was better than a lot of the other ones I've seen, but not quite as good as the ones that I mentioned, so... Sorry, that's the best I can do when talking about a rom-com on this podcast.
Could be worse, could be Sex in the City too.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's kind of an example of what I'm talking about. Like, you know that's going to be awful. I don't care who you are, what gender, you know that's going to be terrible. It's like they're riding camels in Afghanistan or something. Like, you can't look at that and be like, yes, that is going to rock my world. Like, yeah. I don't understand how... I don't know. So if something... That's all I'm saying. That's my plea for the female listeners out there. Just, like, if you see something like that you know is going to be terrible, just don't see it, please. Yeah. Or at least wait till DVD. Like, don't support these movies in the theaters and give the executives the idea that what they're doing is working, because it's just going to be more and more crap. So it's like a never-ending cycle unless we put an end to it somehow. I don't know. That's my... rant about romantic comedies. Sorry about that, guys.
No worries. You win.
So you want to move on into a little bit of the geek news, Dr. Rickman?
Sure,
I have a story for you. It's something I just got hot off the wire.
All right.
Let's do it. Uwe Boll is going to do a Holocaust movie.
Yeah, I posted the trailer earlier today. Did you watch it?
Mm.
Oh my gosh. This is like, seriously. I don't even know. In my post, like, I started out, like, I don't even know what to say about this. You know, when you make fun of his movies, it's fun to bag on the horrible movies he makes, but this takes it to, like, another level. Speaking of grindhouse films, it's like he took the Holocaust and Auschwitz and turned it into a grindhouse film, an exploitation film.
Wow.
It looks insane. It's like there's a tasteful way to do movies, and then there's a not-so-tasteful way to do movies.
So is it, I don't know, I haven't seen the trailer, is it very clearly going for a divisive, controversial type of feel? Is that what's going on with it?
Oh, of course, of course.
By the way, when you were describing that, Ben just looked lost. Like, what's happening? Why did you shoot Bambi's mom? Why?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's crazy. He actually plays, Uwe Boll actually plays a Nazi guard who is, it's in the trailer where he's standing outside of a gas chamber while a bunch of, you know, while they're killing the Jews, and you're just like, this is so wrong.
It sounds like he's exercising his right for free speech, and that's about it. So I don't know. If you see something like that, you can't let that get you riled up. You just got to be like, guy's being a douche. Like, I'm not going to support him.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, it takes his career to a whole new level. Of this guy isn't just going to be bad, you know, his movies just aren't going to be made fun of anymore. Now it's going to, like, I think it'll be more attacking him personally for what I guess he's doing with this. Oh, it's so weird and creepy.
Yeah.
Well, you know how Boll has this thing, like, he challenges people who say that his movies are shit to a boxing match?
Right.
Yeah.
I say now that he has delivered the ultimate insult to the Jews, we should see if we can get Bill Goldberg out of retirement. Go take him up on his offer.
Wow. Yeah, I've got a friend who works with Bill, and I might be able to make that happen. But, oh, man. Oh.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
All right, well, let's move into some lighter-hearted news here.
Have you guys talked about the Sandman TV series?
No, I've never read Sandman. I know nothing about that. I know it's Neil Gaiman, and I know it's, like, groundbreaking, but other than that, I know nothing.
I mean, the movie, they've been trying to get something made since the comic book came out in the early 90s. So, you know, it's been years that they've been trying to get this. I personally, it'd be cool if they did it right, but it just, I don't see it happening and being done correctly. I don't know. Unless AMC or HBO picks it up.
That's true.
Yeah, I think it'll work just about as well as The Crow: City of Angels.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I don't want to see.
I don't know. Maybe it'll be one of those situations like Preacher, where Preacher got picked up as a TV series with Mark Steven Johnson directing it, and I think like Robert Rodriguez was in talks to direct one of the episodes and stuff, and then it just kind of fell apart. So, I mean, we saw this same type of announcement for Preacher a couple years back, and then nothing ever came of that. So I guess for those of us or you who are hoping for this adaptation to kind of fall through the cracks, there's definitely still the possibility of that.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see what happens with it, but most likely it'll fall through just like the tons of other Sandman projects that have tried to get off the ground.
Yeah,
that's what I hope. Boy, that's what I'm hoping for anyway.
So, Mazer, how about you? What do you think about Liam Neeson being cast in Peter Berg's Battleship?
All right, so we know this: the plot for Battleship is us versus aliens. So, who do you want defending the Earth from aliens?
Not just us versus the aliens are on water hopping ships.
Yes. Thus, we need battleships. Because they invested in the technology to get here and land, but not to get around.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know how we have the Mars rover? Kind of just shot down and then we just had our rover? Same deal, except watercraft. That just happened. Liam Neeson? Is he playing a scientist or a general the president? What's going on?
I will quote from Dr. Venkman's own post, which I have pulled up here in front of me. It says, Neeson will take on the role of a character named Admiral Shane, a naval officer whose daughter, played by Brooklyn Decker, is engaged to a young naval officer, played by Taylor Kitsch. So, he's an admiral.
He's an admiral.
He's, like, leading the charge,
That's
I guess.
The man you want. Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course we'd want, you know, Liam Neeson leading us into battle against aliens, but
this movie,
come on. Doesn't he have anything better to do?
I'm sure he's got a lot of stuff better to do, but that paycheck is probably looking pretty good.
It's you know, looking at like a screen legend like Michael Caine, where the news just came out that he was cast in that new Journey to the Center of the Earth sequel, and you're just like, no.
Yeah, I don't
You're
know what
a screen
he's
legend. You don't go out and to star as a grandpa in a sequel to a bad movie.
This is the thing. Maybe he really wants to work with 3D. That could be it.
Or I prefer the explanation that he and Dwayne Johnson have been friends for like years, and they just are looking forward to just being completely raucous and just ripping the bars apart of town and in whatever town they're filming.
Seriously
though, I mean, if you look at Michael Caine's IMDb, he's been in some really bad movies over the years.
I know, but he's at a point now where he doesn't have to be.
Yeah, he's much more revered now than he was at one point. But, I don't know. Battleship kind of bothers me on the board game movie level, but I like...
It's nothing to do with the board game. The board game is out. Forget the board game.
Well, you know for a fact somebody is going to be like, you son of a bitch. You sunk my battleship, and then it's gonna get like, you know.
No,
dun, dun,
well,
dun,
they said they said in an interview that yes, that line will be in the movie.
Okay, well, there we go.
So
delivered by Liam Neeson. I mean, think of the gravity he can put into the delivery of that.
It might be worth seeing for that. I'm not gonna lie. The only thing that bothers me is like Rihanna and like some of the other. Brooklyn Decker, like, Sports Illustrated swimsuit model, really? Like, I don't know. I can't... It seems like they want to take this movie seriously by casting Liam Neeson, but at the same time, if you look at what's going on in this movie, it's like, it's not going to be... I don't know if it's going to be good or not, but I guess we'll have to reserve judgment, but...
As we try to do.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be fun.
As we try and fail to do
on
a regular basis.
I'm sure it'll be a fun, entertaining movie. and we'll walk out. You know, I mean, I hope to hell it doesn't end up like, I don't know, like those big, you know, like the big budget Disney films, like Prince of Persia, where they just, everything just sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I just, and we'll see.
This maybe gets into the same argument as our rom-com, you know, let's not support these crappy films.
Yeah.
You know what pisses me off here? You know, one of the things that pisses me off is just kind of a side note here, is this Battleship movie, Universal Pictures gave it a $200 million budget. And it'll probably go over. Now, there was a time when Universal had the opportunity to do a little movie called Halo with Peter Jackson and Neil Blomkamp.
Yep.
And Universal started freaking out when the budget got to like $140 million.
That is actually a fantastic point.
And you're just like, and now they're doing Battleship when they could have had a huge built-in audience with a property that could be just as big as Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, and they were freaking out at a $140 million budget, so they decided not to do it? Shame on Universal Pictures.
Yeah, that makes no sense now that I think about it. That's a very good point.
The thing is, it could have been a $140 million budget, but it could have been like Microsoft gets like half of the profits or something ridiculous. Where it's kind of like, well, we're putting all this money in, why aren't we getting more on the back end? And Microsoft,
How much is Milton Bradley getting for Battleship?
Probably not as much as Microsoft.
Probably not as
for
much
Halo.
As Microsoft would have got.
Yeah. So.
And you know what else is? I don't know if you saw this. I mean, it's kind of Microsoft gave a little update on what's going on with the Halo movie, that they're still interested in making it, but they're not in any rush to do it. That they've taken all of the, I don't know, I think there's been like 5 or 6 scripts written by different screenwriters, and that they're trying to develop something out of all of these scripts. And it just, I don't know, it sounded like it could just end up being a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, we know when Microsoft takes a lot of time to develop something, we get really great results. So,
what was the last movie that Microsoft developed?
I think that was a sarcastic comment. What was that, like, okay, a Windows 7 dig or something? Like, I don't know what that was. What that really
okay.
was.
Vista.
Vista. Yes, of course. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Dr. Bingman, you bring up an excellent point. It must have been something about back end profits and things like that.
Yeah.
Where, because it really makes no sense. Obviously, Halo has a much more relevant and willing to spend money on movies like fan base than than something so generic as Battleship, which like most kids probably don't play board games anymore and maybe have never, you know, most people maybe under the age of like 13 might not have even heard of Battleship before. Like in the age of the internet, like there's no reason for it anymore. I don't know, you know, there's that,
but
was
it's
just
it's
kind
something
of, it
like
was,
people know. And as terrible as it is, it's, you know, Battleship, and as
but
vaguely branded as...
But for the market that they're going for, like, they want, I'm sure, guys 18 to 35 or whatever who are willing to, who have disposable income to spend on movies, and, like, those, that's the same exact audience as the kids who play Halo, so,
it's true.
You know, kids, and, you know, I count myself.
Well, when they release Battleship for the iPhone, I think you're going to get the younger audience with their iPod touches getting hooked on some Battleship.
Yeah, that's probably
play
true.
Over the internet, you know, anyone in the world.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on and talk just a little bit about Natalie Portman being offered the lead role in Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity. Dr. Venkman, you want to take this one?
Yeah, she's been offered the lead role in Gravity.
Fantastic.
She hasn't taken it yet. She's still got to read the script. They've offered her the role. Angelina Jolie was attached to it, or was in negotiations, and then all of a sudden she wasn't, and then everyone's like, well, I guess that's the end of this project, even though Robert Downey Jr. was attached as a co-star. Angelina Jolie leaves, and everyone starts freaking out that, oh, the movie's not going to get made now because she dropped out. Is she really even that big of a box office draw anymore? I don't think so.
I think so, depending on the film.
Well, yeah.
And if you're talking, if you're just looking at actresses in general, like if you're gonna find an actress to open a movie, you're looking pretty good with Angelina Jolie. You know, like
yeah. But
also internationally.
Yeah.
That's a name that really sticks.
Honestly, I think Natalie Portman's a better choice. That's all I'm saying. I like seeing her in that role more than Angelina
I think it would really have to depend on the role. But yeah. I think it's
I don't buy Angelina Jolie as an astronaut. I'm sorry. I just don't.
And Natalie Portman at her age is a believable astronaut?
Totally believable. She's a Harvard graduate. Come on.
I don't know. Just on the very surface of it, I kind of do buy Angie more as an astronaut just based on the age alone.
Now,
we're talking about acting preferential, who we think is a better actress, that's a totally different argument. But
did she leave because of negotiations, because of money, or did she leave because of the script, or was it scheduling?
I just think it was just something that she probably had some better things to do or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But regardless, Robert Downey Jr. is involved with it too, so.
Yeah, that seems like a fairly decent pull.
That right there is a pretty bankable name to keep the movie alive.
Yeah, from what I understand, he's just more of a secondary character, though.
Secondary or not, his name will be on the poster.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, something else that we should mention is that, after Jolie passed on the movie the first time, Warner Brothers went into this kind of hyper-casting mode where they were trying to, screen test a bunch of different people and try to get people to audition and all this, and it was down at one point between Scarlett Johansson and Blake Lively for this role, and then...
I'm glad neither one of them got it.
Well, yeah, I kind of am as well, and then, somebody in the chat room points out that Rachel Weisz was also in consideration very recently.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, definitely. No, I
believe
be
that.
I'm right there. Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you. I think Rachel Weisz is kind of a much more interesting actress than any of the ones that we just mentioned. maybe with the exception of Natalie Portman. But if you're talking about Natalie Portman as the kind of younger generation, then yeah, I'll buy that. But definitely as far as the kind of older generation, not to refer to Rachel Weisz, not to call her old, but you know what I mean, older. I think she's much more interesting. I mean, she was awesome in the challenge.
Let's just say she makes an even more believable astronaut.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Right?
But unfortunately, that's not really going to happen, or not that we can foresee at this point. But in any case, and Natalie Portman is being offered, basically handed this role based almost solely off of the buzz that's coming out of Telluride for Black Swan, the Darren Aronofsky movie that's coming up. Apparently, she's just getting, absolutely rave reviews for her performance in that movie, and the Warner Brothers or whoever was just like, yeah, let's go ahead and try to snag her with this so she can jump, straight from that into this movie and kind of, it'll be a little bit before Black Swan is released, but maybe, they can be riding high off of the awards buzz and all that stuff if that actually comes to pass, in February of next year, January of next year or whatever. But Kyle, what do you think about this? What do you think about Natalie Portman for Gravity? Have you been following this story at all?
I have not been following the whole Gravity thing. I do like Natalie Portman a lot, even in movies that people don't know that much, like Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, which I thought was a great little movie, and I can't find anybody else who ever saw.
Yeah, I didn't see it, actually.
It looked good.
And
it didn't look bad. I just didn't watch it.
And by the way, Natalie Portman is my exhibit number one in trying to vindicate Hayden Christensen because, yeah, I understand he was really bad in the Star Wars prequels, but look how bad she was in the prequels, and we all know she's really great in other things.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm not before and after. I'm not somebody who utterly hates Hayden Christensen, because I don't know if he's seen Shattered Glass, but I thought he was really great
in that
movie.
Yeah, he's great in that.
But yeah.
Life as a House
he was really good in.
He's got some potential. He just doesn't utilize it very often.
Yeah, Jumpers was a really bad choice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's more on the director.
Maybe the screenwriter as well. But Okay, well, I don't know. Unless you guys have anything else, I think that'll pretty much wrap us up. Am I right?
Real quick. Did you guys... Clint Eastwood recently gave an interview, and this would just be interesting for discussion, but... Clint Eastwood recently gave an interview in which he confirmed that he was actually offered the role for Superman before Christopher Reeve was, and he was offered the role of James Bond after Sean Connery.
Insane.
And he turned both of them down. He turned them down. His agent wanted him to take it.
He turned them down like a badass because that's what Clint Eastwood does.
The thing is that I couldn't see him in those roles. It would be so completely awkward.
It would, wouldn't it? Like, I'm like, okay, one, I can't imagine him in tights. You know, the blue and red.
Like, he could put it on and he would have the stature, but I can't imagine him as Clark Kent.
Especially older Eastwood at the time when these movies were being put in development. I mean, I'm sorry, older to us now, but this is actually would have been a younger Eastwood. But, yeah, I mean, he definitely had the physique for it at the time, but it's just, like, the attitude and the persona he had crafted for himself over the years. It's like, he's not Clark Kent. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And honestly, can you imagine him doing an English accent? For James Bond.
I don't think he would have. He just would have been like, screw it, I'm making it a gruff and gritty James Bond. Like, I don't care what you say.
He squints.
Yeah. He would have turned James Bond into himself. Like, that's all there is to it, I think. Like, Kyle, what do you think?
And it would have deprived us of my personal favorite James Bond, which is, again, going against the grain, Roger Moore.
You're out of your mind. I'm just throwing that out there right now.
See, that's the thing. I know that other James Bond movies were grittier and had better action, but the Roger Moore movies are just so much fun.
I think he was the right Bond for the right era.
But I think
Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
That Bond would wipe the floor.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, even some of the Roger Moore ones, I don't want to get too far sidetracked on this, but he's in a clown suit at one point. It got out of control.
That's where Austin Powers comes from, is just those terrible, I mean, some of those Bond films, just, my goodness, what were they thinking?
The self-parody involved is just, like, over the top to a level that it never should have reached, but,
Yeah, it's just weird to think about that, you know, that in an alternate universe, had he been in these movies, I mean, the whole world would be a different place.
You know what, though? there's something, I think you're probably right about that. Well, I don't know, maybe. I don't know how the American cinema landscape would be a different place, that's for damn sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, because who knows how many movies he would have gotten sucked into with sequels and stuff, and if he would have started directing when he did and all that kind of stuff, like, or kept on going with his directorial career. I mean, now he's like one of the most premier like directors working today. But one interesting thing that I kind of want to bring up kind of along the same lines about that is, like, the only way that I could see Eastwood playing a superhero is if he played, and it doesn't matter to me which one, either Batman or Superman in a big screen version of The Dark Knight Returns.
If he did, he would have to. I'd love to see him as Bruce Wayne.
You think?
I'd love to see him as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I mean, either one.
If he ever gets made, they have to cast him. They have to.
They better freaking move quick because he's not getting any younger.
Now,
I guess. What about a Batman Beyond?
Yeah, he could be a really good Bruce Wayne in Batman Beyond.
Because he's not really Batman anymore. He's just a really tough Bruce Wayne.
It's just an old dude who loves to berate his protege.
Young Eastwood would have made a really awesome Punisher.
Yes.
Ooh. Yes. Agreed. Now, here's something interesting. And I'm just going to throw this out to all of you. I don't know if you've read this interview or not yet. If you haven't, then don't answer. He gives his favorite comic book character growing up. Who do you think his favorite comic book character was growing up? I would never have guessed this, by the way.
Archie.
No.
Growing up, man. Green Arrow?
No.
Okay.
Superman?
No. The Sub-Mariner.
Oof, that is super
the
obscure.
The Sub-Mariner.
Wow.
Who likes the Sub-Mariner?
Is that like Namor, Prince of the Deep or something? Is that like the same character?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, he could have been a good Submariner. I could see it.
Wow.
Now.
Well, what's stopping him? Let's greenlight that movie right now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's bring out that Avatar technology.
Oh, man.
Because everyone wants to get their hands on that.
All right.
And just lastly, I didn't know if you guys had had the chance to mention the passing of Satoshi Kon, the anime director. But if you guys have never gotten the chance to go see his movie Paprika from, I think, 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, I love Paprika. Such an amazing film.
I have not seen that.
Oh, you got to watch it.
I have
they're
it
doing
in
a li-
my closet.
They're doing a live action. They're adapting it into a live action film, but I don't know how they're going to get it as visually stimulating.
I don't know how they – because between like Scott Pilgrim and Speed Racer, you got to have that balance. It's got to be – I mean the Wachowski brothers with The Matrix I think maybe found the balance that works for American audiences. But yeah, it seems as if you – the more you bring in those references from the comics or the anime – the more people disconnect from it. So, I don't know.
And yeah. I don't know how they'd do a live-action Paprika now that Inception's been out there, because they are a really similar idea.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, everyone would just go, hey, man, you guys ripped off Inception, even though Paprika was, what, 2-3 years before it?
Interesting
point.
Indeed. All right, well, that'll pretty much bring us to the end of this week's episode. I think we've got coming soon. Not a lot of stuff is coming out. I'm Still Here. The Joaquin Phoenix documentary is supposed to be opening in limited release, so if you're in probably New York and L.A., that looks, like, ridiculously interesting. I don't know if it's going to be good at all, but it looks very kind of captivating, I think, documenting the kind of whatever, a year in his life of just, like, the total insanity of him retiring and trying to be a hip-hop star and all that stuff. What else is coming out? Resident Evil Afterlife in 3D, which we saw some footage from.
It looks terrible in
3D. It looks really bad.
It looks so badly staged. Everything, no joke, is in slow motion.
Yeah.
And everything is just look, pause, look, cut, slow motion. There's no tension or... It's really, really bad.
Yeah, and then also The Virginity Hit, which is the new movie kind of produced by Will Ferrell and Adam McKay that Dr. Rinkman and I actually had the chance to see at Comic-Con. Were you with us for that screening? Or no?
I wasn't. Has there been any trailers or anything?
Yeah, I've seen a couple trailers for it.
There's okay. One trailer. Yeah, I think there's one out.
Yeah, it opens in limited release, and it expands, I think, on, like, the 17th and again on the 24th. So it's going to be kind of doing a slow rollout across the country in the next few weeks. But Dr. Brinkman, just very, very quickly, what did you think about The Virginity Hit? Would you say, like, it's worth people checking out or what?
I enjoyed it. It wasn't a bad movie. It was a fun movie. It's funny.
Yeah.
Very, like, very real, you know?
It's definitely of the YouTube generation, that's for sure.
Yes.
Was it
sure,
as a surprise
sure.
as, say, the previous year's Comic-Con Sex Drive?
See, I think Sex Drive.
Yeah. Sex Drive is good.
Yeah, I love Sex Drive. Sex Drive, yeah, that was a great movie.
I think I like Sex Drive a bit more than The Virginity Hit.
Okay.
But they're kind of in the same vein, you know? Like, a lot of the same stuff actually happens in both of those movies, now that I think about it. They share a lot of plot elements. And kind of the same kind of formulas and things like that. But if you're thinking about going to see The Virginity Hit, I would say rent Sex Drive. I believe it might even be available on Netflix Watch Instant right now. So yeah, I would just say check that one out.
That was
and
a film that
for,
like
wait for DVD for Virginity.
I'm surprised it didn't hit more because we saw it and I was like, oh, this movie just has kind of a classic, like feel to it.
Nobody really knew about it, I don't think. They didn't have the money to market it, is what it was.
Yeah. We tried to help it out on Guitar, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I'm going to save my movie-going money for The Social Network and Let Me In.
There you go. Yep. And, of course, Devil, which is coming out on September 17th.
I'm interested in Easy A.
That's, again, that's later this month as well.
Yeah, well, you know, you could make a movie which was an hour and a half of Emma Stone sitting there eating her morning Cheerios, and I'd still pay good money to see it.
Wow. Well spoken, Sarah. Well spoken.
Well, I think that about does it. Right?
Yep, absolutely.
Until next week, anyway.
Yeah.
When we talk about horror movie stuff.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Exactly. Yeah, it was great having you on with us, Kyle. We appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, man. And,
yeah,
and
let's do it again, man.
You want to throw out one more plug for where people can track you down in your other podcast?
That's right, npccomics.com/geektragedy, or find us on iTunes, the Geek Tragedy Podcast.
Cool, yeah, and I'll, since we're doing self-promotion, I'll mention also the Not Just New Movies podcast, the other podcast that I started a little while back. You can find us at notjustnewmovies.com and in iTunes as well. What else? I think, I mean, that's pretty much it. You guys can feel free to subscribe to the Geek Tyrant podcast, the one you're actually listening to right now in iTunes. It's free. You should do it. Track us out on Facebook at Geek Tyrant Fans. Or, I'm sorry, facebook.com/Geek Tyrant Fans.
Yeah.
And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/Geek Tyrant. Dr. Venkman, you got anything else?
No. That just about covers it, my friend.
Cool. Mazer's got something. Hang on.
Yeah, I'm just rolling out something. It's probably only interesting to people who have Squarespace websites. Is I'm rolling out something called Mobile Tyrant, and it is going to be three different style sheets that will turn your Squarespace website. It'll have a mobile version for it.
Nice.
So, mobiletyrant.com. We're launching the beta on Geek Tyrant tomorrow, so we're going to have videos and all sorts of stuff like that. Just so, because people have come to Geek Tyrant on their iPhone and stuff, and they go, wow, where did this come from? We didn't know Squarespace can do this. And I have been getting an email, I can't even say how many emails I've gotten about this, and in fact contacted by Squarespace themselves asking, are you guys going to do a tutorial? Because we're getting a lot of people are telling us about this.
Yeah.
So we're actually finally launching this soon.
Cool.
Well, actually tomorrow.
Good stuff.
September 8th.
And Squarespace still has that promo with us too, right?
Yeah, if you want to, I mean, we love Squarespace. We wouldn't switch to anyone else. If you use our promo code GeekTyrantSquared,
that's the word squared spelled out.
Yeah, you get 10% off the lifetime of your order, not just, you know,
the first year or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, lifetime, forever.
So, good stuff. Cool. Well, yeah, that pretty much wraps it up. Thanks again to the people in the chat room. Also, we've got a bunch of people joined us in the chat room. So thanks for stopping by, guys. Thanks for contributing to the conversation. Thanks to Kyle again, and thank you to my fellow Geek Tyrants here on the
podcast. We got to do this again, like, yeah, maybe once a month.
We'll,
like,
make it happen.
We should do it live. Better. Definitely.
Yeah. We'll get the technical difficulties.
We won't have me running around the office for about 30 minutes trying to set something up.
Cool. Well, in any case, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you guys next week.
Thank you.
Yeah, see ya. I'll be back any old time you'll have me.
Cool.
Awesome. Thank you. Take care.
All right. See you guys.